Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back. This is Dr. Ken Berry. I have got, if everything goes well, technically speaking, I've got several guests today. There's been a new paper published about a self-insured corporation who decided that they had way too many fat diabetics on the payroll and it was costing them too much money. And so this live video today is going to be explaining what this company did to help their people with diabetes and who were obese and had high blood pressure and other medical problems, taking a handful of pills every day. What this company did, who they contacted, who they contracted with, and what were the outcome. I think you're going to really enjoy this video. If you know anyone who's obese, overweight, diabetic, or if you know someone in the HR of a large corporation who's paying out the ass for health insurance for their employees, and they'd like to save a ton of money on their health insurance costs, then you might want to share this video with them. So I have with me today Dr. Tro. Let me see. I don't know. I've never had this many people. And then I have Amy. Amy, you're a little off simmer. Hey, Amy, how's it going? Good to see you. There you are.
Yeah.
And I have Nick Norwitz.
Hey.
Who's, I think, in my estimation, one of the busiest men in the United States. This is ridiculous. So welcome, everyone. For those of you who don't know, go around. Let's start with Dr. Tro, and then we'll go to Nick and then Amy. And I want you guys to introduce yourself and tell us just a little bit about yourself, including a quick snippet of your health journey. Because a lot of times when I use the word fat in the title of a video, people are like, that's fat shaming. That's you're being crude and rude. And I'm like, no, I used to be fat. I kind of get to say that. I can say that. And, you know, you can't really take that away from me. So let's go around starting with Dr. Tro.
Yeah. So I'm Dr. Tro. I'm a board certified internist. I'm a board certified in obesity medicine. I was 350 pounds. So I know what it was like to step in those shoes. Had a number of health issues, reversed that. Since I've started a clinic here in New York where we focus on obesity and diabetes type 2 reversal. And we have a team here. Amy Igus is my program director. Brian Wiley is our other health coach. We have, our medical assistants, office managers, Talin, and we're growing. We have a new doctor coming on, Laura Buchanan. But the goal is reverse diabetes and obesity. And, you know, I'm just happy to be here today. I can't wait to talk about this study, but I'll let everybody else introduce themselves first.
Go, Nick.
All right. Well, my name is Nick Norwitz. I am currently a medical student at Harvard Medical School. Prior to that, I was doing my PhD over at Oxford. And it was around at that time I was struggling with some health issues, not obesity for me, although it's afflicted some people in my family, but I came to metabolism and nutrition and diet through struggles with bone disease and ulcerative colitis, which is pretty severe, ended up putting me in the ICU, palliative care. And, I really got into working with the low-carb community when I started to see that, you know, there was this general pattern of people struggling with metabolic diseases, obesity, ulcerative colitis, other inflammatory autoimmune diseases, and they all had this common motif of, you know, kind of going maybe a little bit away from conventional medicine and trying this other approach that worked really well, which got me fascinated in it. And since then, I've been doing research in addition to my medical studies in this space and got to know you and Dr. Tro. And this recent project we did, I was really excited about because just tremendous results. Dr. Tro and his clinic did an amazing job, and that was really exciting for me.
All right, Hi. Amy, you're
yeah,
up.
I'm Amy Igus. I'm the program director and health coach with one of the health coaches at Dr. Tro's practice. My health journey started, my journey with obesity started when I was, single digits, tagging along with my mother at a Weight Watchers meeting. And I spent my entire adult life at or over 400 pounds, despite literally dieting my way, trying every diet known to man, going to every so-called expert known that I could find and that my parents could find when I was a kid. And I didn't think it was the right decision for me, but I was about to have bariatric surgery and did a random Google search, discovered low carb, and I thought, let me try this for 2 weeks before I was meeting with the surgeon. And I didn't lose enough weight in that 2 weeks to really make any difference, but I could tell there was a shift. And I canceled the surgery, and I have gone on to lose over 220 pounds. Despite never believing that this was actually possible, my loftiest goal that I could imagine for myself was to be a smaller fat person, right? Like I had no,
yep,
think there was no thought that I would ever lose as much as I have.
If you guys don't know Amy's story, it is very inspirational. And Amy does battle with me over on Twitter, where we're trying to make the world a healthier place. So let's see. Okay, so let's talk about, there was a paper published in Metabolics. What was the journal, Nick?
Metabolites.
Metabolites, yes. And so this was a case series of patients. So Tro, I want you to take it away and tell us what inspired this study. And you don't have to name the company, but this was a self-insured corporation who was spending a lot of money ensuring the health of their people, people taking a lot of medications, having a lot of doctor's visits. And so how did this come about?
Yeah, so I'll do kind of how it all started, and maybe Nick can, he's so great at pulling the stats together and what it all looked like. And I think really Amy can cover the human element of it. A lot of self-insured corporations, large corporations, they have many employee wellness programs. And the company that reached out to us is so invested in their employee health. I mean, I've never seen a company so invested. They have CrossFit gyms, they have physical therapists, they have clinics, they've done Weight Watchers in their clinic, they have dietitians. I mean, this was one of the most amazing arsenal of wellness products that we were actually being added to. So we were an addition to their services. And they said, we want to bring metabolic health and low carb to our, you know, to our workforce. And so we're a clinic in New York, and we have health coaches. We're virtual. We do virtual care. This is what we do. You know, we remotely monitor weight, blood pressures. We remotely monitor blood sugars. We have a great team of health coaches, an app. I mean, we have an immersive experience. So we said, hey, let's start with 12. That's expanded to now 70 or so patients. And I said, hey, let's see how we do. We'll take the first 12, and then we'll roll in some other people. And as we can accommodate more, we'll see more. And so the first 12, their lives were changed. And, you know, I thought their lives were changed. And we started looking into the numbers as a quality improvement project. And I was like, man, I really need the help of somebody who knows how to pull this all together a lot better. So I said, Nick, you know, Dr. Norwitz, any chance you want to review this and take a look if my suspicions are true, how well we did, you know, what does it look like? What is their insulin resistance? What is their, you know, we knew like individually their lives had improved because person after person had lost weight. And me and Amy, you know, we would hear the stories of not only the patients, but their families' lives improving. And so I said, let's just analyze it all and see just what, like, show me the money, right? I want to go back to this company and say, how did we do? How do we do on their employee health? And how do we do on, you know, did we save them money by stopping medications that weren't needed anymore? So then I turned to Nick, and Nick brought in Dr. Sotomoto, who's just a genius. They're both geniuses, and we've worked together in the past. So they looked at the data. I mean, maybe Nick, you could take it over from there.
Absolutely. Before I talk about some of the numbers in the paper, I just want to frame this against the backdrop of like what I'm seeing and learning as, you know, a next gen doctor. So like a medical school where, you know, we get the lectures about nutrition. I'm in the clinic seeing what patients are told about nutrition. And this is probably not surprising to a lot of you, but it's a lot of just like cookie cutter, my plate, you know, eat less, move more kind of advice. And the narrative goes that, you know, patients can't really like achieve the things that I've seen so many people achieve, including you three right here, that it's borderline impossible. And it's funny because it's like, is it impossible because it's actually impossible, or maybe the advice we're giving is just shitty? And to give you just some examples of how bad I think some of the advice is, I think in my last paper, we cited some of it, which is actually a paper, maybe we can talk about it at some point another time, but it was really cool. We used continuous glucose monitors, like in this study, but for medical education, to kind of open medical students' eyes to, maybe what is maladaptive advice. Things like literally recommending that patients with diabetes eat sweet potato pancakes with brown sugar and all-purpose flour. Like, this literally like hospital name, healthy eats diabetes, and then here's sweet potato pancakes. So that's the quality of advice you're giving to patients. So it's no wonder common knowledge is, you know, losing tons of weight is impossible, because the advice we give doesn't really stack up with what, you know, the science says is metabolically logical, let's say. So you set up a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're giving bad advice and people fail. So it's interesting to be in the clinic of, you know, some of the top hospitals in the world, ranking at least, and to see people just like either perpetually gaining weight or just not having success. Very small having success, and very smaller still percentage actually maintaining it. So the question arises for me is like, what can people actually achieve? If you just took a cohort of people that has really had trouble losing weight, you know, class 2, class 3 obesity, which is BMIs over 35 and 40, you know, the people that have really struggled with this, and actually gave them good advice and support, then what could they achieve? And that's what I think is really cool about this study, because that's exactly what Dr. Tro and Amy in their clinic did. They took people who had been suffering, the sickest people who needed the most help and might be the most hard to reach. Mean BMI starting was 48, I think, 48.3 mean BMI starting. For, you know, so that everybody knows, obesity is BMI 30. Class 2 obesity, BMI 35. Class 3 obesity, which used to be called morbid obesity, that's no longer the PC term, was 40. So this on mean BMI was 48.3. And people had prediabetes and diabetes. These people are the people that, like, you know, if somebody stereotypically wouldn't adhere to a diet, it's these people. And you've probably seen on Twitter what the results were. 100% of people, every single person over 6 months, lost weight. There wasn't one person left behind, which means everybody can do it. And the smallest amount of weight lost was 15 pounds. So everybody, 100% of people lost at least 15 pounds, which is very different than what we would expect if people are given standard advice. Range was 15 to 58 pounds, and then mean weight loss was 38 pounds. In addition to that, there was improvements in HbA1c, which is a measure of average blood sugar, by 1.1%. Now, not 1.1% of what their HbA1c is, the percent is the unit. That is a massive change. That is better than
most. Let me just say for everybody listening, Nick, a lot of people don't know that. They just say, oh, my A1c was 5.6. Well, what that means is 5.6%. And So when Nick says that they dropped over a full percentage point, that means they went from 7 to 6.
Yeah.
Which most of the FDA approved medications for type 2 diabetes got their FDA approval by lowering hemoglobin A1C by 0.3% to up to 0.7%. And So just in this very short intervention, they lowered their A1C a full point.
Yeah, I think actually Dr. Soto, who did a lot of the in-depth statistical analysis, he's our biostatistician and a good friend of mine, actually made a comment that like 1.1% HbA1c reduction is around the 95% confidence interval for most drugs. So usually when you do statistics, you can report a confidence interval. So how much 95% of the people like fall in that proportion. So by comparison, if you look at like the 95% confidence interval for what we did, that's like a 3.8% reduction, which is massive. So if you're comparing apples to apples, but There was the HbA1c reduction and then improvements in things like triglycerides, blood pressure, and the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association 10-year risk score for a major cardiovascular event dropped by a relative risk reduction of 44%, which is massive. And that is actually underestimating the cardiovascular benefits, because One, we actually had to inflate some of the numbers to make the calculator work because people's LDLs even were so low, which is funny for me and Trope to say, but it's true. And it's not capturing reduction in things like HOMA IR, which are not included in the calculator. So yeah, the risk reductions in cardiovascular disease were massive. Weight loss was universal. HbA1c reduction was quite large. And all of this was against the backdrop of deprescribing medications. So the medications they were using to keep their HbA1c's lower with prediabetes and diabetes, those were removed while the HbA1c came down. So the numbers I'm reporting are underestimating the impact. And the win-win that we can all talk about and emphasize is the cost benefits of deprescribing. The average
reiterate that, Nick. So these people's type 2 diabetes was improving not because you were adding more medications. You were actually stopping their medications because their type 2 diabetes was improving so much, so quickly, that they no longer needed the medication. And this is where it's going to make, I think this is going to be one of the tipping points where keto goes mainstream. When multi-billion dollar corporations who self-insure, when they start to hear that, wait a minute, these people get to eat until they're full. They get to eat delicious, real food, and their diabetes improves. So they have less of a risk of heart attack, stroke, and everything else. But also they're taking less medication, which as me, the CEO of this company or the CFO, we're going to save a buttload of money. Our people are going to be healthier, probably more alert, probably a whole lot of stuff. But bottom line for any corporation that self-insures, we're going to save millions of dollars over the course of the year in health costs.
Mm-hmm. And can I talk about that a little bit? Because
yes, please.
You know, we lowered the average A1C was about 7.1, I think, and we lowered it to about 6. So they came in diabetic, they left us pre-diabetic, but they're still with us. So in that 6 month time, they lowered it from 7 to 6. But this is while stopping insulin in one patient, lowering about 100 units of insulin in another patient, stopping 40 units of insulin in one patient. Two patients stopped GLP-1 inhibitors, the new injection drugs for diabetes. We had several people come off metformin, several people come off Januvia. So, I mean, I can't even count how many. We stopped 8 diabetes medications, not including insulin. We stopped several blood pressure medications, cholesterol medications. So the improvements that we saw were despite stopping medications. Now, this is a win-win-win because every one of those patients was like, Tro, please take us off medications. Like they wanted to come off. They wanted another way. So the patient won, you know, the company wins and the health improves. And I think the big news here is, Dr. Ken, we showed that the heart health improved in the 6 month time frame. We used the AHA. I know how much we all love the AHA here. The AHA plus the ACC calculator, right? They have a calculator that they want every doctor using to say to risk stratify their patients. So we evaluated these patients, not by the way we would on their A1C reductions and their medication deprescriptions, but the way the AHA actually wants us to evaluate them. And in this setting, a ketogenic diet reduced the heart risk by 44%. That was an absolute risk reduction of about 4%. The relative risk reduction is 44%. It's right here on the screen. You know, this is huge. Drugs don't do this.
Right.
This is why
no drug does this. No single drug comes even anywhere close to this, which is that at some point that's going to have to make the American Heart Association wake up and go, damn it, nothing in our toolbox, meaning pill box, does this. What are we going to do about these keto people? What are we going to do about Dr. Tro?
Yeah, and I think, and this is the other side of this is not just, you know, it's not just, hey, do keto, do intermittent fasting. There's a whole nother human element and the coaching element, the education element, and you know, I really wanted to highlight that part of it. And I don't think anybody here better can kind of highlight that human, you know, the human interaction and the stories than Amy, I guess. So, Amy, I mean, the stories, I mean, it brought us to tears sometimes. The pictures brought us to tears.
This is true. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to see, you know, when you have been hit your head against a wall, for some of these people have been doing at this for 50, 60 years, and you're hitting your head against a wall and failing for decades. You know, the toll that that takes. When you're told that, you know, diabetes is a progressive disease and you're just going to take more and more medication the rest of your life, that you just really, that the failure rate for most diets is, or the success rate is like, I think 3%, you know, every year. The U.S. News and World Report comes out with that dismal number. And then when you see people actually succeeding, and then their families are succeeding, like we've had people that aren't even in the program, husbands and spouses of patients who are coming off medications also from living with people that are on our program. It's been remarkable. It's just been really, it has brought us to tears at times. You know,
Amy, let me ask you something. Sure. You were kind of the coach in this situation. And so you had frequent contact with the patients. You answered questions. You gave them advice. Now, I'm picturing in my head, these people lost so much weight. This must have been like a Biggest Loser television show setup. You had these people on the treadmill for how many hours a day?
You know, it's funny because truthfully, and nobody really wants to hear this when they start our program, but we don't even talk about weight loss for 4 to 6 weeks. It's kind of irrelevant. We tell them we do not expect to see weight loss. We kind of don't want to see weight loss for the first 4 to 6 weeks. It really has nothing to do with weight loss in the beginning. So it's really about addressing what are the foods that are making you hungry and being able to stay low carb under all circumstances. And in those early days, it's really about harm reduction, right? Like everybody comes to us and they're going to be good, right? Everybody's like, I'm going to start a diet, because we've all started hundreds of diets over our lifetime. You know, we're going to be good. But the truth is, we all know that life intervenes always 100% of the time, and stress happens and sleepless nights happen, and you're working late and you don't have time to cook, and birthday parties and celebrations happen. And how are we going to help these people prepare for that? And so those early days of the program, that's really what it's about. It's about how are we going to help everybody when life hits the fan and, you know, everybody's mad at you and you get a flat tire on the way to work and you haven't had time to cook, right? And so, no, we do not. You know, nobody has changed their treadmill and nobody's eating lettuce and white knuckling it through birthday parties and celebrations. We teach people how to live their lives so that they can do this forever. I'm proud.
Can I give some stories that I just remember? We had, you know, somebody who posted a picture online. So this is a company who came to us, but these are 12 people's lives that we touched early on. And, you know, we got to know them, we got to know their families, and we got to know, we worked often with their families. We said, bring your husband with you, bring your wife with you, bring your kids with you. And when we went back to the company and said, hey, look, here's the results, here's the medications we were able to stop, here's the health of your patients, you know, the patients were all raving about it. Now that corporation has expanded the program, so now we're going longer and we're going with more patients, and our, you know, it's amazing to be able to touch people's lives. And these aren't people, can, you know, Dr. Barry, you get people who probably come to you, they're interested in low carb and they're interested and they know what you do, and they heard you talk on YouTube, or they heard my podcast, or they saw me on social media. And these were people that they never heard of me. You know, they're out in the South and, you know, they never heard of us, right? And so we took, you know, people who worked 9 to 5 or 7 to 7 and were in a clinic, and we just brought metabolic health to them. And that's all it took. You know, it wasn't like these people, you know, chose us. They just chose to get healthy, and we guided them in a way that their dietitians never had. So it was an honor.
That's an excellent point, Dr. Troe. You know, a lot of people come to my YouTube channel or they come to your Twitter and they're like, oh, I want to work with Dr. Barry, Dr. Troe. I believe in them. And we all have to admit, as healthcare clinicians, there's some degree of placebo there. There's some degree of there's a mental aspect to that. Like, oh, no, I know that Barry knows what he's talking about. But you're saying these people working for this company, they didn't know you guys. They never heard of you. They didn't follow you on Twitter. And so that I tell people all the time when they're like, oh, you saved my life. I'm like, no, honey, I did not save your life. I gave you the basic principles and you saved your own life. That's what happened. And so I think that your publication, and I've got the results up on the screen, kind of the breakdown of all the benefits that these people gleaned. They didn't get these benefits because they believed in Nick Norwitz, even though he is cute as a puppy. They didn't believe in Amy because she's gorgeous. They didn't believe in Tro because he's, well, Tro. It had nothing to do with that. It was the basic principles that they taught these people. And I also, nothing pisses me off more than when I hear a disgruntled, depressed doctor say, well, you know, I don't waste time talking about diet to patients because they're not going to do it. And so all of a sudden we keep getting these publications like this one saying, actually, if you give people the correct information about changing their diet, the proper information about changing their diet, and with the promise, hey, you might be able to stop some of your meds, people are ecstatic to do this if you give them the proper information. But if you say some dumb shit like, oh, just move more and eat less, yeah, no, that doesn't help anybody. And that's why none of your patients listen to you, doctor. But when you give good foundational principles, like Tro gave, and like Amy gave, and like Nick gave, people, they're hungry for that information. They're like, yes, I will do this. And then immediately, here come the results.
People say to me all the time that, you know, oh my God, you have so much willpower. I can't believe that you did this. I can't, like, look what you've done. And I really firmly believe, you know, that I am not extraordinary. What is extraordinary is that I kept trying after decades. But the truth of the matter is I finally got good advice and I just put one foot in front of the other and kept going, right? And if I can offer any bit of anything, it's the hope that it's possible, because it really is if you get good advice and you follow
Absolutely. Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
I have to say, nothing bothers me more when I hear about, you know, giving dietary advice and then talking about the baby steps model, which I hear all the time, that you have to encourage people to take baby steps because the big steps are too hard. There's literally a paper in NEJM, which is one of the highest impact factor journals in the world, if not the highest impact factor, that talks about how to engage in motivational interviewing with patients and diet and kind of the recommendations to make. And one of the examples given, and I kid you not, is, you know, help patients make baby steps with their diet. An example would be if you replace potato chips with tortilla chips because they're lower in trans fat. And I remember reading that and I'm like, do you really believe that that's all your patients are capable of doing?
But also, Nick, that's a false choice. That literally does not help that patient's metabolic health. 0.1%. So not only are you completely discounting the ability of the patient to do something meaningful, but you're also giving them this bullshit simulacrum of, these chips are better than these chips. What the hell?
It's lip service. And, you know, I feel like if we actually gave people good information and believed in what they could do, that's what this paper shows, that this is accessible to everybody. You took, you know, naive people, when I say naive, I mean naive to ketogenic diet, Tro on and Ken on Twitter, and just gave them information. They were really motivated. I think people underestimated how motivated and how hard people really try.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, this really shows. You take people who are motivated, you give them good information, and they can't succeed. So let's stop underestimating people, saying we're just going to give you the easier information, the sweet potato pancakes, the tortilla chips, because it's baby steps and you can't do more. Let's say, no, we know you want this. We know you're motivated. So we're going to tell you what you need to do to get results. Let's see you get the results. And then it's a self-fulfilling, you know, after that, it's a virtuous cycle. People have success. They're like, this works. I feel great. I actually enjoy the food. I'm not hungry. And it just perpetuates. And we'll have to see, this was the 6-month, you know, results, how this goes over 2 years. My prediction is that people are going to continue to lose weight until they're at their healthy weight for them, and then be able to sustain it. And I suspect that it will spread, because there's a community aspect to this, which I know Amy and Tro can talk about. And I'd love to see what the knock-on effects are on patients' family members. I think it was like reportedly among these dozen participants, their family members lost like 200 pounds by proxy. We can assess that. And I do think that, you know, health can spread like a virus.
Oh, I totally agree. And that's what I see every day, Nick, is someone will use the principles I teach them and they will literally transform their health, lose scores of pounds, reverse their type 2 diabetes, reverse their fatty liver. And then when a family member or friend sees them and they're like, holy shit, you look amazing. What did you do? And guess what those people are more than happy to do, because the principles of a proper human diet are so simple. You don't need a PhD or an MD or an MD or any other D. You just need these few basic principles. Avoid these things. Eat these things. Think about food like this. No, don't think about food like this. And when you've got those basic principles, anybody can do this diet to reverse their obesity or their type 2 diabetes. Even a doctor can do it. So it can't be that hard.
Ken, I love it because I was at a community event today. We had your book, you know, right there on, I don't know if you saw it, I posted it on Twitter, right there for everybody to pick up. You know, everybody's shocked by the title, but I love it, you know. And I think one of the things that Nick highlighted it, and really what Amy had kind of mentioned was, you know, the biggest reasons to stop a ketogenic diet, and I'll tell you from what I've heard from patients, right? The biggest reasons are stress, mental health, right? Those are reasons that cause you to stop. Okay. You know, business meetings, social gatherings, vacation, another reason to stop, right? Feelings of deprivation, another reason to stop. Their doctors telling them that they're going to kill themselves is another reason to stop. So we basically prepared each of these patients for all of those. We gave them an app with education. We gave them a doctor. We gave them one-on-one coaching, right? Weekly coaching initially, every 2 weeks coaching after that, right? So we really, we got to the bottom of their blood pressure, their blood sugar. They saw their health improvements. So when their doctor said something funny, they knew to challenge it. We literally had one patient go from diabetic range blood sugar, 7.5 A1C, to not even pre-diabetic, 5.2, off of medication, goes to her doctor, 30 pounds down. And I kid you not, I'm going to quote what she was told. She was told, I don't know what you're doing to yourself. You're forever going to be a diabetic. That's never going to come off your chart. This is unsustainable. These are the words. And you know what? This poor, you know, this is one of the people from this cohort. She fired the doctor. She fired the doctor. She's like, I don't have to take that. For the first time in my life, my health is better, right? And she's like, this is the last time I'm seeing that doctor. You know, we have your team. I'll find a new primary care doctor in the meantime. And we'll help that, you know, that patient in the, you know, as she searches for that new primary care doctor. We're like a metabolic second opinion. And so we're trying to take it and take all the typical things that trip people up. And this is the human element of it, right? It's not the science. Nick captured the science so well. Their trigs came down, their A1C came down, we stopped meds, their health just drastically improved. Dr. you know, Soda showed that their HOMA-IR improved with these beautiful graphs and the supplement. If you guys check out the paper, because it's all there. But really, it's the human element sometimes we forget about.
Oh, I totally agree. I've got a question for Amy, and then I'm going to put up the graphic showing the overall results for the patients. Amy, back to the coaching. Now, so what I want to drill down on exercise, because so many people out there will act like you can't lose fat if you don't exercise. That's not impossible. That's not going to happen. You have to burn more than you put in or you will not lose weight. So how much exercise was recommended for the people in this study? How often were they checked? Did you have like a pedometer on them to see how many steps they took a day? And then also a follow-up question, how many liters of water did you force them to drink a day? Because we all know that drinking lots of water will help you lose fat. How many liters of water were they mandated to drink a day in order to lose this weight?
I know you're going to be horrified to hear the answer here, but not one person was told or asked to exercise. But 100% of them came to us at some point when they were likely fat adapted and their appetite was down and their energy levels were up. And they were like, you know, I have all this energy. I think I'm ready to start exercising. Absolutely. And we do not tell them to go do, you know, 70 hours at Orange Theory or CrossFit or something really insanely rigorous for a beginner. We said, go for a gentle walk, build in, you know, 5-10 minutes a day, a couple of times a week, make it a regular part of your routine, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you can do, and then come back home and just build it into your routine. And then we leverage up from there. So it is, we do not force people to be tied to their treadmills. We do not force feed them, you know, gallons of, what is it? It's supposed to be half your body weight and I don't know, whatever the experts are saying these days.
You and I have both done it. You and I have both done that, thinking that actually did something. But so there was no.
Well, you get more exercise when you run back and forth to the bathroom when you drink.
100%.
Yeah, you know, a lot of
your muscles working.
So let me pull up the summary slides. And Dr. Tro or Nick or Amy, whoever, I'll start with this one and just kind of go through this and tell us what the average person in this study, and this was 24 weeks, is that correct?
Yep.
24 weeks, and you had how many participants?
It was a dozen to start, and then there were 10 at the end. One person discontinued for family matters, and another person actually ended up having their employment terminated for reasons I don't know, but you couldn't be in the study if you weren't an employee.
Yes.
So at 24 weeks, there were 10 people, and I believe now it's being scaled up to, what, 40, Tro, because of it's been so successful?
Yeah, I think it's going to be up from there. I want to say we're at 30 right now, and it may go to 50. Am I right? Amy may even know
that.
Yeah,
we're going. The second cohort has 20, and then the next cohort is starting very soon. It'll have 20 to 25, and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's expanding after this. So this first look was basically the first 24 weeks, right? And we wanted to see how we did, and we wanted to see what was the impact. And this infographic, I like it because it actually walks through. We wanted to also spell it out to other doctors so they could go, you know, if you're in this Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners, if you're a metabolic health practitioner and you have a local employer and you can pitch this to them. So we kind of gave them a blueprint. I mean, you know, it's physician supervised. We're monitoring them remotely. There's coaching. You know, we have low carb and intermittent fasting. We have Brian Wiley, who's certified in training. We use smart equipment. We have our own smartphone app that has, you know, a metabolic health curriculum so that people can actually go and just start before they start, right? So why do they have to wait for me to see me, wait for their labs? They could just start learning right now. So asynchronous care was a big thing. You know, I think what we wanted to get, you know, across with this and the real-time messaging, the social media, the community, they have, you know, over 48 meetings in that 24, you know, week span that we reported on. And they're texting, you know, multiple times a day. I did this. This is my difficulty. Should I buy this? What about these nutrition facts? So if you're looking, overall, the average patient is probably interacting some way with our office somewhere between 300 to 550 times in a 6-month time frame. That means all the time they're logging into their app, using their scale, using their blood pressure cuff, checking their continuous glucose monitor, getting a text, getting an email, meeting, right? So it's a very immersive experience and these people want it. And the people who really had a struggle, so, you know, Dr. Norwitz talked about how there was somebody who lost 15 pounds. You know, we weren't talking about food with them. We were helping them deal with their mental health. We were arranging getting a counselor. We were, you know, managing their stress. We were, you know, working, adjusting their medication, talking to their psychiatrist. And the person who lost 60 pounds, you know, we're rah-rahing, we're cheering them on, you know, so it's an individual approach for everybody and not everybody's the same. And I think the results are pretty clear. And I don't know, Nick, if there's anything else in those results that I can hash out that you already haven't.
No, I mean, it's point by point what we said. Average weight loss, 38 pounds. Everybody lost weight. HbA1c reduction, 1.1%. Percent is the unit again. So like pounds is the unit on weight. Percent is the unit on HbA1c. 1.1% is more than most drugs I know. a systolic blood pressure drop of 17 millimeters of mercury. That's a lot more than like the DASH diet.
I was just about to stop you, Nick Norwitz. And so the American Heart Association, they love to promote the DASH diet. That is their sine qua non diet that they promote. Now, I'm sure, Nick, as a PhD researcher and a medical student, you've read a little bit about the DASH diet. How much does it lower blood pressure on average?
I think it's actually 11. Like, it does lower blood pressure, something like that.
Three to five points on average. And so you guys just kicked the DASH diet's ass. Also, let's keep in mind, Amy, feel free to correct me if I'm speaking wrong here, but did you guys teach these people calorie restriction or to stop eating before you were full, or were they able to eat until satiety, whereas the DASH diet is a calorie restriction, semi-starvation diet?
We never once mentioned calories. In fact, I make people put a dollar in a jar every time they say the calories word.
Love it.
It's just eat to satiety, eat when you're full, eat until you're satiated, and stop eating when you're satiated and when you're no longer hungry. And rinse and repeat, you know? And then what happens is that the hunger dials back and people will end up restricting on their own because they're not hungry.
Absolutely.
That is the complete opposite of every diet that we've all tried, including the DASH diet, over and over and over.
Totally agree. And now the part, Dr. Tro, that every CFO of every self-insured corporation, every HR manager of every self-insured corporation, that next box, estimated savings. Talk about that.
Yeah, so we took the deprescriptions. Okay, so we took just all the meds that we stopped in this cohort, and we went to GoodRx to just, because we don't know the private negotiations between insurers and between pharmacies and wholesalers. So we went to GoodRx, which is a pretty good, reasonable estimate for what drugs cost.
Yep.
It could be that there's some discount on some medications, but it's pretty accurate. And we said, all right, let's estimate, you know, how much money this is on an annualized basis. So we just did some rough accounting. I'm sure there's accountants who could do much better than me. I'm sure, you know, somebody who's in a HR department and knows their pharmacy numbers could do a little bit more accurate than we could. But we just said, hey, let's plug it in. And lo and behold, on average, you know, with that retail cost, we were able to reduce about $45,000 in retail costs for medications. Which came out to about $4,000 per year per patient, which I to be honest, is more than what we're charging. So I mean, this is truly a win-win-win, and that the patient's health is winning. The patient satisfaction is through the roof, right? And they have another team, a second opinion, resources. The company wins. We get to fulfill our mission.
Yes,
which is really end diabetes and end type 2 diabetes and obesity. So, I mean, this is hopefully it's a good lightning bolt to everybody in the field.
I hope so. And then this final box, I think, really will put the muzzle back on the plant-based vegan cardiologist because you reduce the ASCVD score by 44% in these people. So I don't think a vegan cardiologist can in any way say, oh, you're going to have a heart attack if you eat keto. Anybody want to talk about that 44% reduction in the 10-year risk?
Yeah, so that's an absolute reduction of 4%. So these, the average, you know, risk before they start our program was 9.5%, which is basically in the intermediate, almost high range of risk, cardiac risk. We basically just about cut it in half when there was 5.2 or 5.3, something like that, in terms of risk at 6 months. And what this means is that they're pretty much in this low risk, low cardiac risk category. So, you know, if you've been following my work in the past, and me and Nick have worked together on papers in the past, you know, we've tried to dispel some of the myths. One of my first papers was on, you know, a ketogenic diet improving binge eating. My next paper was on high triglycerides, which they say you can't use keto and high triglycerides, but we all know that it lowers triglycerides, right? And, you know, I went after the ADA in my last one because they say you have to lose weight. And we showed that no, A1C reductions can happen without weight loss. So we said, hey, let's just look at the AHA ACC risk. Let's actually quantify their cardiac risk so we know what impact we had. And we reduced their risk and their LDL. I don't think it changed, Nick. Tell me if I'm wrong, because if I remember, the LDL was the same. You know, it pretty much, it didn't go up, it didn't go down, maybe 1 or 2 points higher, but it wasn't a big difference, but their triglycerides dropped and their blood pressure dropped. So their risk significantly improved. And this is a, you know, this is the AHA, this is the ACC. This is not, you know, Dr. Tro and Dr. Ken's way of evaluating a ketogenic diet. This is standard medicine. So we showed that a practice that promotes a ketogenic diet and intermittent fasting, right, will literally reduce cardiac risk the way that the AHA wants us to measure it. So, you know, so when we saw these results, you know, I was eager to get it out there because now it's in the literature. Keto is good for heart health.
I love it. I love it. Any final words from any of you guys? Any summations? And then also at the end, Dr. Tro, tell us for all of the CFOs out there who are sitting watching YouTube on their phone going, they saved how much per person? Where they can sign up for this program as a self-insured corporation?
Well, I'll let everybody tackle it first in case they got something to say.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, no, I just, you know, from a very like a human level, as somebody myself who battled this for years and years, it's incredibly gratifying to help other people do it. I mean, we, you know, you said it yourself, Dr. Barry, that like, you know, it's not that you saved anybody's life. It's not that Tro or I did it, or Nick did it. It's just that we give people the proper tools and then they can kind of run with it. And it's really gratifying. It's incredibly, it's amazing. So give it a try.
Yeah, I guess what I'd say is what's really meaningful about this project for me is it lends credence to the idea that, you know, weight loss, metabolic health are accessible to anybody, which is something I believed before. And this just, you know, is a little bit of nice confirmation bias. And so I'm very optimistic for the future and to see where this will go. Well, you know, I think this is only the very beginning and it'll be cool to see this scale up and catch on.
Yeah, and let me just give Nick Norwitz some kudos. When I was a medical student, I didn't have time to read the damn newspaper, much less publish a research paper. So well done, my friend, well done. Okay, Dr. Tro.
Yeah, well, I want to echo that because I've worked now with Nick on 2 projects. I think he has 15 publications in the past 2 years. I have to say that I don't think any of this is possible without him. You know, I don't have the stats experience. I don't have the ability to kind of make these papers what they are. So I want to just thank him and, you know, thank his partner in crime in Mexico, Dr. you know, Adrian Soda, who's just an awesome guy. Listen to him on the Low Carb MD podcast if you haven't. Two just humble and really awesome guys who elevate whatever they touch. So I want to thank them, and I want to thank Amy, because really without her, this practice, you know, the programs we have, they don't exist, right? They don't exist. And so it's her and me being vulnerable with people we meet, you know, day in and day out, telling them how we struggle, how we have struggled, what we faced, sharing with our vulnerabilities with them. So I just want to thank everybody. And yeah, if you're a, you know, CEO or CFO or a HR person and you're seeing this and you're like, holy crap, you know, I can get people, you know, if you're wasting money on Weight Watchers right now, if you're listening to this and you are a HR executive or CFO and you're wasting money on Weight Watchers right now, okay, we have data, right? We have data, right, to say that we're able to have an impact. So, you know, it's near the point, Ken. I'm a small private practice, right? We're a small private practice, even though we're doing these things. It's near the point where I would say, where I should bite my words, you know, just like Virta has done, right? And we're expanding on their work. Just like David Unwin has done, we can realistically save people money, if we know, and we know the impact we can have. If we have somebody on insulin, if we have somebody on injection drugs, which are really expensive, somebody on Januvia, we look at that right away, and we know we can have an impact on the bottom line as well as the patient's health. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing to be able to do this, get paid. People are happy with you. You know, I wish every doctor, every med student can see this. And they can just call our office, drshore.com, or just call.
Yeah, and any doctor out there, any medical student out there, is this true, Nick? There's a rumor going around.
1 minute. Somebody just mentioned, asked if I was related to Errol Norwitz. He delivered my first child. Yeah, he's my dad.
Ah, there you go. So rumor verified.
Kathleen is, yeah.
I love it. I love it.
But
okay, but what I was going to say is, for many doctors, practicing medicine sucks the old way. It's not fun. And I can remember med school watching my preceptors do their thing and thinking, that's really it? That's it? You know, I shaved my legs for this? That's what you do every single day? Damn, that does not look like a bunch of fun. And that's why I wanted to be a surgeon, until I realized that you got to get up at 4:30 every morning to do your stuff. And I'm like, nah, never mind. I'll just do family medicine. Now I can still do some minor procedures. But just look at Trope. Look at him. I guarantee you, back when he was fat and practicing the old way, he was the miserablest, hatefulest cuss you've ever met in your life.
I'm still that.
Am I exaggerating?
I think I'm still that. So if you say the word calories, if you say the word do any diet that works, and if you say eat more and move, you know, eat less and move more, you got that old hateful trope still. It's still living in there somewhere.
Yeah, but better pointed now, better aimed at useful targets. Right. Guys, thank you so much for putting this publication together. Thanks for doing this with me today. All you guys watching this, you know someone that this information would help. Please click the share button and share this on your favorite social media. We're all on Twitter fighting the dietary wars every day against the plant-based vegans and against the calorie in, calorie out people. Join us all on Twitter and help us change the world and make it a better health, better place. Because when you improve your health, you improve the health of our beloved Mother Earth. Never, never forget that. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me. I'll see you next time.
Thanks, Ken.